This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Linda Mottram. Tonight, Victoria will plunge into its fifth lockdown from midnight tonight, with dire warnings about how infectious and fast-spreading the current outbreak is. Also, could Australia ration its Pfizer doses, getting more shots in arms from each vial? A look at vaccination strategy with immunologist Cassandra Berry.
A lot of our vials are multi-dose, so it could probably go to twice as many people if we diluted it further. You actually do get an increase in antibodies, so this is a fantastic outcome, and perhaps Australia could be looking at that.
And economic hell for those missing out on COVID disaster payments. We'll meet those in the arts struggling to get by. The focus is on Victoria tonight, though, where the Premier, Daniel Andrews, has just announced the state will go into hard lockdown for 5 days from midnight tonight, with a necessity and determination, he says, to beat the current fast-spreading outbreak. More than a dozen new cases have been revealed in the past 24 hours, not high numbers, but what's worrying health authorities is the speed with which one chain of transmission in particular is moving. Here's the justification for the lockdown from Premier Daniel Andrews.
We would prefer that this had not come to our state. We would prefer that we didn't have to deal with these issues, but this is so infectious. This is such a challenge that we must do this. You only get one chance to go hard and go fast. If you wait, if you hesitate, if you doubt, then you'll always be looking back wishing you had done more earlier. I am not prepared to avoid a 5-day lockdown now only to find ourselves in a 5-week or a 5-month lockdown. That's why we're making this very difficult decision, and it's why I know Victorians will, despite the pain and the difficulty of this, know and understand that there is no option. What's more, they'll know and understand that they each have an important part to play in the success of this lockdown.
Dan Andrews there. Well, Samantha Donovan has been listening into this afternoon's developments. She joins us from Melbourne. Sam, just go through what the Premier's actually announced.
The lockdown, Linda, starts at 11:59 tonight for the whole state. It'll go for 5 days until 11:59 next Tuesday night. It's a hard lockdown and essentially a repeat of our fourth lockdown in terms of conditions. So once again, there'll be those 5 reasons to leave home: shopping for essentials, exercising for up to 2 hours within 5 kilometres of your home, care or caregiving, work or education if you can't do it from home, and getting vaccinated. The list of authorised workers is the same as the last lockdown. Now, masks must be worn indoors unless you're at home, of course. And from 11:59 tonight, they must also be worn outdoors at all times. Linda, the Premier acknowledged that country Victorians will be pretty devastated to be joining Melburnians in this lockdown. But that's because there's already been some exposure to the virus in towns like Balan, Bacchus Marsh and Barwon Heads. A lot of people too from Geelong at last Saturday's Cats match at the MCG. And the MCG, of course, is an exposure site. But there is a glimmer of hope of a reprieve for people in some regional areas. The Premier says he will release parts of regional Victoria from the lockdown before next Tuesday if it's safe to do so. And that'll all depend on the testing results.
So how confident is the Premier that the lockdown will lift next Tuesday night?
Well, the biggest concern, Linda, at the moment is this chain of transmission that's emanating from the aerial apartments in Maribyrnong, a suburb in the city's northwest. So that's where those Sydney furniture removalists passed the virus on to 4 residents so far. One of them went to the footy last Saturday and at the MCG, and 3 new cases in patrons have been announced today. The state's COVID coordinator, Jerome Wymer, has said that this chain of transmission is possibly the fastest moving the nation has yet seen. Daniel Andrews says he's hoping 5 days will be enough for the lockdown, but he can't guarantee it.
Once we've got a sense that we have cases, but we've isolated them all and they're tucked away safely, and we don't have community transmission, mystery cases, unknown and unchecked chains of transmission, we'll be able to open up. And we're confident that we can get our arms around all of these cases and be clear that there's not something going on out there that we don't know about.
Dan Andrews there. Sam, the Prime Minister, meanwhile, has announced today that structure of the financial support for individuals and businesses affected by lockdowns is set to change.
Yes, so the Prime Minister is planning to take a new plan to National Cabinet tomorrow, and that would see if a lockdown lasts more than 7 days, workers could get up to $600 a week if they're no longer getting a wage. The assets test is being dropped altogether. But Daniel Andrews this afternoon has made it pretty clear that he's expecting Victorians will get that support even if the lockdown doesn't last, as we're hoping, for 7 days.
There is need in Victoria from 11:59pm tonight, and we expect that the Commonwealth Government will step up and help those people who need that help. They've put a 7 day kick point, if you like, a start point, that if it's not a 7 day lockdown, you wouldn't be eligible. I'll be talking with the Prime Minister tonight about maybe a pro rata payment, and I'm very confident that the Prime Minister has heard our message loud and clear this week.
So there may be some pretty heated conversation about that at National Cabinet tomorrow.
Indeed. Thanks very much, Sam. Samantha Donovan, our reporter in Melbourne. Well, there's just despair across Melbourne at this news. The city has borne the brunt, of course, of Australia's outbreaks already. Anxiety is high as schools and shops and individuals with plans now prepare to put life on hold again. But there's also a determination to get it over and done with, as memories of last year's 111-day lockdown still haunt the city and the entire state. Rhett Burney has this report.
After enduring one of the world's longest and strictest COVID lockdowns, Melburnians know it only takes a small number of cases to throw their lives into disarray. So with today came a dreaded sense of déjà vu.
I'm trying not to cry, so excuse me if I get emotional, but, you know, everyone's been on tenterhooks for the last 48 hours waiting to see what happened. And it just gets harder. Like, it doesn't get easier. It just gets more and more challenging.
Helena Lewis lives in an inner city suburb with her husband and two toddlers. They were only starting to get their lives back into routine after Melbourne's fourth lockdown ended mid last month. Now they're preparing for a fifth round of stay-at-home restrictions.
This lockdown and the previous lockdown were both caused by interstate people coming to Victoria, and I'm not going to say that that isn't really bloody hard. It is really bloody hard when we're working so hard to do our bit, and it's crossing the border.
Fatigued small business owners are also at breaking point. Adam Hayes owns Salon A in the inner city suburb of Paran. Lockdowns cost his business at least $10,000 a week.
Total anxiety, like the rest of Melburnians, I'm saying, and anyone who owns a small business.
Several of his salon's neighbouring shops didn't survive the most recent lockdown.
Just in the last 2 weeks, four businesses are closed in my street, and they're small businesses like coffee shops and little restaurants. They just can't deal. The last 2 weeks totally wiped them. I'm going to see probably the same thing again coming out of this lockdown. Other small businesses that just can't cope.
The hairdresser says the federal government shouldn't have pulled the pin on JobKeeper until most people were vaccinated.
Considering the way they've done the rollout, they should have had at least Plan B. And Plan B would have been keeping JobKeeper available while they rolled out this slow vaccination policy of theirs. And at least we would have some sort of plan.
Over the other side of the city in Sunshine, in Melbourne's west, graphic artist Nick agrees.
I'm blaming federal government. I am honestly blaming the federal government. I wouldn't even blame New South Wales for this. I think that the vaccine has been fumbled from the beginning. I am very irritated by that. I would love to get a vaccine right now to do my part, but it's just not open to me at this point, which I think is ridiculous.
Nick says the mental health fallout from previous lockdowns is taking its toll, but he expects this one will hit even harder.
You are seeing it in the people around you, in the community, whether it's just shops that are, you know, having to put up out-of-business signs, or even closer to that, I've got a close friend of mine who's had to postpone their wedding, I think, 3 times in a row now, just because every time the date comes up, another lockdown happens. And just the emotional and financial stresses on them, it's too much.
But he says Melburnians are resilient, and there is a sense that a short, sharp lockdown now will prevent more pain later. though it is frustrating.
Because we've been through this before, we know that we need to get on top of it. It's just annoying that we have to continually try to get on top of it.
For mum of two, Helena Lewis, there's only one way out of this, and that's through vaccination.
I really just want to, if there's one thing I'd say, it's like, get vaccinated. Please get vaccinated, because our only way out of this is to get vaccinated.
Melbourne woman Helena Lewis, Rhett Burney, our reporter there. Well, there was some better news out of Sydney today, with a drop in daily COVID cases to 65. But the Premier is warning that figure will likely rise again tomorrow because of an increase in the number of cases infectious while in the community. Still, Gladys Berejiklian says the lockdown has stabilised the number of daily cases and that green shoots are starting to show. There is, though, ongoing confusion over the definition of an essential worker. Resentment, 5 million people strong, appears to be growing. David Lipson reports.
Do you think that is appropriate?
Sorry, one question at a time. I'll get to all of them. It's not really nice being shouted at, can I say?
At the Premier's daily news conference, frustration is growing, as it is no doubt across Greater Sydney, with the reality of a long-term lockdown starting to bite.
What health advice are you getting about the likelihood of opening up on July 3rd?
The same health advice we provided yesterday and the day before, and I will ask Dr. Chant.
Do you expect to be opening up on July 3rd?
I will ask Dr. Chant to... I wish I had a crystal ball.
With 73 COVID patients now in hospital, the health system is being squeezed. Liverpool Hospital in Sydney's southwest postponed all non-urgent surgery after a patient believed to have been pregnant tested positive to COVID. At Westmead Hospital in Sydney's west, a fully vaccinated nurse working in a COVID ward also tested positive. And a suspected case at a cancer treatment facility near RPA Hospital is also under investigation. The good news is the headline figure of 65 cases of community transmission.
That's a welcome drop on yesterday's numbers, but it comes with a warning in that 28 of those cases were infectious in the community.
And that's the bad news. The critical number that the Premier says must get close to zero is higher today than it was yesterday, so the government expects to see an increased caseload tomorrow.
Whilst the case numbers are bouncing around, we are seeing a stabilisation. They are not growing exponentially. That tells us that the settings we have in place are having an impact. So my strongest message to everybody is keep doing what you are doing. Keep sticking to the rules, because we are seeing the impact of that. But the next challenge for us is to see a drop in the numbers.
The question for a city in lockdown and a government that has thus far resisted calls to clamp down much harder is how to bring those numbers down. The Premier's answer: reduce mobility.
Every time you set foot outside your house, you need to ask yourself, do I need to be doing this? And you have to plan your journey, make sure you have as little interaction with anybody as possible, and make sure you follow the health rules at all times.
The health rules around what constitutes an essential worker remain somewhat slippery. This week, the government encouraged workers to speak to their bosses if they don't think they should be showing up.
Well, retail workers are pretty stressed at the moment.
Bernie Smith is the New South Wales Secretary of the SDA, the union which represents retail workers.
You know, 58% of close contact sites in the last 48 hours were in shops or shopping centres. 88% of casual contact sites in the last 48 hours have been in shops or shopping centres. So if retail workers aren't needed there, they don't really want to be there, but they don't get to make that decision for themselves. So they need clarity. If they have to keep turning up to work, they need access to vaccines. And if they're not required at work, they need a clear statement from people in authority, because a retail worker doesn't get to make that call themselves.
Today, Health Minister Brad Hazzard had a message for their bosses too.
I'm going to emphasise to the employers throughout New South Wales, we're all in this together. Please understand there actually is a health order requiring you to allow your workers to work from home unless they really can't. But it's not really the order, is it, in the end? It's what we can all do. So I just ask the employers to think about that one.
But unions claim it's not just employees in retail being ordered to work.
Yeah, the reports we're getting are mainly from the private sector administration employers.
Robert Potter is National Secretary of the Australian Workers' Union.
Effectively being misinformed and that they are being told by, I think, disingenuous bosses that they need to attend the office.
How widespread is it?
Look, we hope that it is just a smattering. However, you know, good employers, they know what to do. It's unfortunately the bad employers that often don't give the flexibilities for workers to adhere to the health advice.
Robert Potter there from the Australian Workers Union speaking with David Lipson. You're listening to PM on the radio, on the ABC Listen app and via the podcast. I'm Linda Mottram. Ahead, the continuing campaign over the plight of Afghans who assisted Australian troops and are still stuck there. Well, the federal government's being urged to make more adjustments to the vaccine rollout in the race to contain the current COVID outbreak by spreading it all a little bit further initially. While there's been official advice for those in hotspot areas to bring forward second doses of their vaccines to more quickly boost protection in those individuals, there are other strategies. One is to extend the gap between doses, freeing up second doses to get more people their first dose. Cassandra Berry is Professor in Viral Immunology at Murdoch University in Perth.
Yes, now that is a great strategy. So let's talk about AstraZeneca first. So that's a 12-week interval between first and second doses. But even just getting that single dose, after a couple of weeks, you have quite high protection. In fact, about 76% efficacy. So those people shouldn't fret that they are impatiently waiting for their second. If we talk about the Pfizer, currently it's about 3 weeks apart, but if we delay it to 12 weeks, you are also very well protected after that single dose. In fact, it gives you 92% protection in that couple of weeks after your first exposure to the vaccine. Israel have done a study to look at a 57% reduction in symptomatic infections just after that single dose. So that would then leave more vaccines available for other people to get their single doses.
So is that the approach the government should embark on, given the outbreaks we're seeing in particularly New South Wales and Victoria?
Well, I would like them to seriously look at that. The UK and Canada are already doing that with trying to maximise mass protection of their population rather than sticking to the original plan of optimised schedule of the vaccine doses. We're talking about, you know, a race against the virus, and we have the Delta variant loose now, unleashed in Victoria and also New South Wales. I like to think of it as a bit of a dance with the virus. So, you know, we've been doing this slow waltz, very prescribed particular steps, and I think we need to adjust and, you know, start doing a foxtrot and a quick step to really pivot and adjust to this, you know, evolving virus. What we don't want to see is that the virus escapes the vaccine efficacy. So with more people vaccinated, we can keep that virus at bay.
We come up against the supply problem once again, don't we?
Yes.
And there's no quick, easy answer to that, really, is there?
Well, there is another option, and that's of dose sparing. It's lowering the first dose. The UK and Canada are also doing this approach. The US is having serious talks about it now. It would allow the vaccine to be able to spread more widely and protect more people. When you look at the data, the science, just a gentle first dose just can prime your immune response very well. And then we come in later with a second standard dose. You actually do get an increase in antibodies, which are made from our B cells, and also an increase in immunity from our T cells, which are needed to help our B cells make those antibodies. So this is a fantastic outcome, and perhaps Australia could be looking at that, considering our supply-demand issues.
Okay, so there's nothing sort of sacred, should we say, about the amount that goes into that single dose. There are different ways of using the quantity of vaccine you have.
Yeah, so a lot of our vials are multi-dose, so it could probably go to twice as many people if we diluted it further. And we actually do get a surprisingly good efficacy at the end result or outcome.
And what about vaccine mixing, especially given Australia is flush with AstraZeneca, limited Pfizer, but more Pfizer and Moderna coming? What do we know about vaccine mixing, and should Australia go down that path?
Yes, now that's the other option, is mixing, and I've looked at both sides, so AstraZeneca first and then Pfizer second in a UK study coming from Oxford. And they've also looked at the flip side where you have Pfizer first and AstraZeneca second. Now, they looked at a very short interval of 4 weeks and they found that antibody levels were tenfold higher and your T-cell response was also increased by about fourfold. And we also have Novavax that's on order. I believe that's going to be arriving towards the end of the year, which is another option to give us that flexibility.
Professor Cassandra Berry, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much, Linda.
Cassandra Berry is Professor of Viral Immunology at Murdoch University. Well, Australia's jobless rate is the lowest in more than a decade, dropping to 4.9% in Bureau of Statistics figures out today. But that is lagging data. It doesn't capture those who've lost work during the Sydney lockdown. They are mostly eligible for disaster payments, but beyond that group, there's an estimated 500,000 Sydneysiders that can't get work in lockdown and can't get support. Underemployed casuals, especially from the arts industry, and those on JobSeeker say they've been excluded from this week's financial package. Carly Williams reports.
James Manuel is a performer stuck in Sydney's lockdown. He's a saxophonist, rapper and recording artist and goes by the name Jamaz on Mars. He's rehearsing in his Sydney apartment, even though his gigs have been cancelled.
During this lockdown, I've lost a few opportunities, some creative and development opportunities, studio time with some very reputable platinum producers here in Oz. They were booked in months in advance, like I'm talking like April, and I've been itching to get back in and create with them. And obviously, given the circumstances, it's all fallen through and I'm just eating out of my own savings. So I'm devastated.
As a self-employed performer, Jamaz on Mars usually works casual retail to pay the bills, but there's no shifts in lockdown. Because he's on JobSeeker, he isn't eligible for the COVID disaster weekly payment, and he doesn't earn enough to claim the sole trader support.
The turnover or the qualification for this was like $30,000, and I don't know another local performer who's turning over that much alone as a sole trader. That's like full-time musician, recording artist status that's got like a whole professional team behind them. We just don't generate that much money as an ABN sole trader alone. So definitely feeling excluded.
Australia's unemployment rate has fallen to 4.9%, its lowest level since June 2011. But there are questions about the strength of the economic recovery because there's a big number of people without work in Sydney's lockdown.
We estimate that there could be in the order of about 500,000 people who are in the Greater Sydney lockdown area who are relying on JobSeeker.
That's Cassandra Goldie from the Australian Council of Social Service. She's worried about the people locked out of this support package.
The government has completely ignored people on JobSeeker, people who are locked out of paid work and in the lockdown, who have virtually no hope of gaining employment at this stage. They're down on a brutal $315 per week.
There is a $75 million stimulus package for performing arts organisations and live music venues. It'll help the blockbuster shows like Hamilton keep the lights on. The show was looking at a reported $10 million lockdown loss. Paul Murphy is the CEO of the Media, Entertainment and Arts Union. He says it's in the government's best interest to help live shows. They're the ones making New South Wales the big bucks.
Live performance is critical, particularly for cities like Sydney and Melbourne. It brings in a great amount of tourism for these amazing productions. People will travel to see productions like Hamilton, like Harry Potter in Melbourne. These are very important for the economy.
But even if Sydney is out of lockdown in a few weeks, Paul Murphy knows there are some very tough months ahead.
Every time there's a lockdown, live performance is one of the first things to stop. And even when the lockdown ends, it takes a period of time before those productions can come back because it's simply not economically viable to put on a big commercial production if you've only got 25% or 50% audience capacity.
Paul Murphy from the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. Carly Williams with that report. Well, day by day, the security situation in Afghanistan deteriorates and the depressing human toll is mounting as the Taliban continues its sweep to seize power. It's adding to persistent pressure on the Morrison government to expedite a way out for former Afghan interpreters and other workers who assisted Australian forces during the 20-year war, especially as the US stages an evacuation of such people. Nick Grimm reports.
It's a hair-raising ride. The convoy of Afghan national troops comes under fire from the Taliban in the southern province of Kandahar. The video doesn't show the attackers, but a single bullet hole in the Humvee's windscreen leaves little doubt they're close to their mark. Increasingly, many are convinced these troops are losing the fight for Afghanistan. A growing list of foreign states are telling their citizens it's time to leave. And despite almost daily claims from government forces, they're beating back the Taliban advance. The insurgents are countering with video showing their territorial gains, a strategic border crossing with Pakistan, the latest. This unverified video showing an unidentified fighter proclaiming, "People are very happy and are crying with joy. People came to us and said, after 20 years, they will finally have a happy day." But there's anger too among those Afghans who feel abandoned by the United States and its allies. Ghulam Jalani Zwak is the head of the Kabul News TV network. He's speaking here to China Central Television.
I think the US withdrawal was totally irresponsible. Without any political settlement, withdrawal of US from Afghanistan, it's totally irresponsible.
But criticism of the pullout has also come from the man who ordered US troops into the country in the first place, former President George W. Bush telling Deutsche Welle TV, "It's going to end badly.
I'm afraid Afghan women and girls are going to suffer unspeakable harm."
Is it a mistake, the withdrawal?
I think it is, yeah. I think the consequences are going to be unbelievably bad.
Mr. Bush also voiced his concern for the interpreters and other Afghan staff who assisted coalition forces.
I think about all the interpreters and people that helped, not only U.S. troops, but NATO troops. And it seems like they're just going to be left behind to be slaughtered by these very brutal people.
In the US, lawmakers have been lobbied to help those who helped their forces. And now the Biden administration has announced it will conduct an airlift of an as yet unknown number of Afghans seeking special immigrant visas. US State Department spokesman Ned Price.
Our top priority in all of this is the safety and security of these SIV applicants. They have already, in many cases at great risk to themselves, assisted the United States over the years. And so we don't want to do anything that might potentially jeopardize their safety and security going forward. And so there are going to be some details that we may not be able to provide.
Meanwhile, Afghans who assisted Australian forces in Afghanistan have been told to remain in line for official visa processing by Defence Minister Peter Dutton, speaking here to Sydney radio station 2GB.
But somebody who was loyal and faithful to us in 2012 or 13, in 2021, you know, might now be friends with the Taliban or has switched allegiances. That's the reality of what's a very, you know, turbulent situation. And I'm not bringing someone to Australia who we think is a security threat.
There are ways around it, and I don't think that dog whistling and sowing these seeds of fear and stuff in the media is assisting these people. What we are talking about is real people with their lives on the line.
That's Jason Skains, a former Australian Army captain who served in Afghanistan, who since his return has lobbied for the interpreters he served alongside to be given safe refuge in this country. He also stood as a Labor candidate in the 2019 federal election.
You know, we're not really rushing the process. We've got interpreters that have applied in 2013, only arriving last year. That's 6.5 years. And they've been deemed at significant risk of persecution by the Defence Minister back in 2013. Stop kicking the can around into the long grass and making a political issue of this situation. What they face is a very public display that's very barbaric. it really behoves our government to act very quickly on this issue.
Former Australian Army Captain Jason Skains speaking with Nick Grimm. And that is PM for this Thursday. I'm Linda Mottram. Thank you for listening. You can hear us live or later on the ABC Listen app. Get the PM podcast at the usual podcast apps or find our stories at the PM webpage. Sabra Lane is along with AM in the morning, and then tune in for The World Today at lunchtime with Sally Sara. PM is back tomorrow with David Lipson in the chair. Have a great night.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.